All right, what do you say, Gunner? Should we get this party started?
Let's get this party started. All right, good morning, good afternoon, good whatever time it is for you, beautiful people. Welcome to the weekly Mozilla Webmaker Community Call. We have a really packed agenda today, starting out with a very unique and exciting session with Audrey Waters. Audrey, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us just a little bit about what you're working on?
Let's see, I'm a writer, an education technology journalist, and a rabble-rouser. I've been doing some research for Mozilla about whether or not the organization should build a tool for to help folks learn web development in HTML5. So I've been interviewing a bunch of teachers and technologists over the last month about that specifically. But in general, I spend my days writing and ranting about the state of education technology.
Right on. And what is it you might be going to tell us about today that you're up to?
Well, are you ready for me to give my little spiel?
Please.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, over the past month, as I said, I've been talking to a bunch of folks about a dozen educators and technologists, asking them what they thought about web literacy, about the need for better tools or curriculum, how we can help support really folks at a novice skill level to become web builders. And I asked folks in particular what they thought sort of Mozilla's role should be in all of this, both at an educational level, but also sort of at a philosophical and a technological level too. Sort of how do we build this future? Without exception, everyone I talked to spoke about the dire need to improve web literacy, whether it was elementary school teachers or college professors or hobbyists or entrepreneurs. Everyone talked about this sort of huge gap in our collective knowledge base about, really, I think that at a simplest level, how the web works. And so I think, you know, when we think about building a tool, you know, we can jump in with lessons on HTML or CSS or JavaScript, but really there's still this sense of the Internet as a series of tubes and the web as a series of documents that you sort of deliver through those tubes. And so there's a real sort of lack of understanding, I think, at the basic level. So what was interesting as I talked to folks is when you think about the line of web development knowledge, right, from the beginning to the end, really what there is to learn can sort of go infinitely forward. Really, step in, you know, how far down the rabbit hole can we take learners when it comes to HTML5 and web development? And, you know, how much technologically can the web browser do? Can it teach us? I think that's a really thrilling prospect to geeks. To think about the capabilities in terms of taking a whole new generation of web builders down with that learning path for all of us. But I think at the same time, when I talk to folks, there was this pause, and you know, thinking back to that Pushkin, right? There's this whole other direction, the opposite direction, the naughtier, darker, sort of less exciting and thrilling path that we have to consider, right? And it's sort of really web illiteracy. Questions like a lot of folks have, which is sort of what is the web? Is the web Facebook? Is the web Google? What's the browser? Why does it, you know, how does it work? Really sort of why should I care? What do I want to do on the web? Why do I want to build for the web? And I think that these are some really fundamental questions that we need to consider before we sort of march off teaching HTML5. So, you know, when I talked to folks about this question of building a new tool, there was some lots of excitement, but there was also some concern. I think people agreed that we don't currently have a great browser-based tool for teaching HTML5, but I think that there was a lot of reluctance about building something that would force learners into sort of a decontextualized environment. That is, if I want to learn HTML5, I want to learn the tool that real web developers use. This is something that I should note here, that when I talk to folks, I use the analogy Scratch for HTML5, another intriguing analogy was HyperCard for HTML5. But people said time and time again, learners want the real tool, they want to solve real problems, they want to work with real code, they want to build real web apps, they want to do so quickly, they want to do so authentically. They don't want something that marks them as an outsider to the, quote, real web development community. And I think that, you know, that's all those things are really important, and for the sake of time, I'm not sort of rushing through them, but I think it's worth repeating, right? People want to solve real problems, right? How do we help people build projects that matter to them? They want to get on board quickly. Teachers said this a lot, too. You know, kids want to be able to sit down, and they want to make something quickly. They want to take away. And I don't mean, like, they want to put in minimal effort, but they want to get started. We want to do something that can get them onboarded quickly. And this is important, I think, really important. We want a real tool, one that real web developers use. One of the conversations, if you look at my blog, you can, one of the conversations that I had was with Georgia Tech professor Mark Besbill. He's an interesting person. He's a CS education professor, but he teaches CS to non-CS majors, which gives him, I think, some really interesting insights. But he talks about communities of practice and traditional mentorship and apprenticeship programs where you move closer and closer to the real thing, right, closer and closer to the inside. And he talks about ways in which sort of the midwife assistants first start bringing the towel before they eventually work their way up to a birth and then work their way up to a midwife. And so the point for him was that we want to do something that's authentic, an authentic entry point for folks to get into the community of practice of web development. And related to this, he talked about the history of HyperCard, which was fascinating, I thought. You know, HyperCard, you know, he and Alan Kay argue, is one of the most popular user-oriented entry-level, you know, programming tools ever. But Apple abandoned it. But also, you know, for this discussion, real programmers hated it. And I think that, you know, even though hobbyists and amateurs liked it, the professionals didn't. And as such, sort of amateurs had the sense that they were using a tool that wasn't the real thing, and they were, I think, willing to walk, when Apple walked away, everyone was willing to walk away from it, even though, sort of, Mark said the wrong community of practice decided that the tool wasn't necessary. So building the real thing for a real community of practice seems really important. And so, you know, it's funny, so when I talk to folks about, you know, what Mozilla does, and Mozilla's process, already, we made a lot of comparisons between Hackathosaurus, which is a tool I love. I think it's a tool that, you know, one of the teachers I'll talk to says that kids really love. But when I talk to programmers and engineers, they would say, oh, Hackathosaurus is Firebug, right? And so in some ways, yes, you know, Hackathosaurus is Firebug, or Firebug is Hackathosaurus. Both of them sort of let you see what's going on with the code. But one purports to be about debugging, and the other one is about remixing. And I don't know if it matters what is what or which is which, but I think we have to think about how do we get from remixing and debugging to building. And, you know, the question, I think, having talked to all of those folks, is it a tool or is it building out a community? Is it a curriculum? And which of these does Mozilla want to build upon? Does it want to build upon its technology, or does it want to build upon through people? And I think that that's sort of the questions when you think of next steps forward. Do we think about a product, or do we think about a process? So that was sort of a rant, sorry.
Right on. Are there any questions? There's a lot of good notes in the Etherpad. Any questions for Audrey?
I have a couple. Hi, this is David Asher. I thought your analysis of HyperCard was fascinating and controversial, and I disagree almost with everything of it. Anyway, but anyway. let me tell you my take, which is that programmers hated it because it showed to civilians or normals that their craft was not magic. It was actually very very understandable if only the tools were good enough. So that's it's really weird to see my About Me page. It's kind of boring. Anyway. sorry, people on the phone. So I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, just because professionals, in my view, felt threatened by a consumer tool. Like, I know a lot of people who, and I'm sure you interviewed a lot of them, who felt that HyperCard was an amazing tool, even though they didn't think they were professional programmers. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, why do people say they want to use the real tools? Like, do you think that they were trying to be programmers, that they want to be professional web developers, or I'm finding that there's a conflict between the statement that they want to use the tools that real people use, or real programmers use, and the statement that they want to do something that matters to them, or you know, a page or a web app that is appropriate for them. I guess I'm trying to figure out how to combine those two things.
No, I think that's a really good question. I think that partially it means sort of partially building the real tools means that you're actually making a real thing, right? So it's very different than some sort of browser-based learn-to-code tool in which you don't actually make something or build anything. But at the end of the day, there's not really a real project. So I think that partially it's that. It's this realization that, you know, in those sorts of scenarios, that you're not doing the real thing. I mean, in some cases, it's sort of abstracted to a level where when you then move to a real web development environment, you have to learn sort of all new skills again because the training that you have wasn't the real thing.
We don't need to deep dive on HyperCard, but to me, the thing that was fascinating about HyperCard is that normal people build really useful things, right? So dentists build office management software. My mom built experimental management software that was really useful and it was real, and yet it was not using professional development tools. So to me, that's the holy grail, is to build something that doesn't require people to feel like they need to learn all of the stack of things that real developers use. And yet build something that has true utility to them on a day-to-day basis. So analysis. Thank you.
Can I jump in here, Gunnar and Audrey?
Please.
So Audrey, thanks for doing that. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. It's exactly what I had hoped for as starting a conversation, and I think David's response is exactly the conversation I would love to see growing, you know, from what you've started. And so it'd be interesting to look at not just this call, but, you know, using this as a springboard for more conversation, because I think this is super fertile ground. And the one thing that, from a design perspective and even kind of like a what does Mozilla do perspective, that I'd be interested to pull apart and discuss slightly separately is the desire for people to make something real, which I think is at the core of what we're interested in. And I think it's a different era than the era of HyperCard, in that we have a nearly universal platform that people use to, you know, create and consume and interact, you know, which is the web. So I think the absolute core principle we have resonates with a bunch of what you're saying, which we want to make tools that let people make stuff on the web. And the web is a place where you can make real stuff. There may be, you know, environments where you do that in a scaffolded or supported way, but that doesn't mean that what comes at the end isn't the web.
That's right.
So I think the core thing is what I think is different than HyperCard and certainly different than Scratch and another number of other things is we're committed to helping people and building tools for people where what comes out the other end is the web, and they can take it anywhere and they can do anything with it from there. And by that measure, it is realer than anything, you know, that has existed in this domain before. I think there's a separate and fascinating philosophical conversation that we won't answer now, which is what are real developer tools in that environment, and what does it mean to have mass populist consumer developer tools that spit out real things that are the web? So, you know, if we constrain what options you have, or help, you know, in the name of learning, or in the name of, you know, helping you figure things out, or getting you started, or pushing you to remix. But what comes out at the end through that constraint is still a set of web code that you can go and edit in any other IDE or wherever you want. Are we taking away the realness? Or if we created, say, a genre of hackable games that had what is effectively a universal level editor, where there really were 10 or 20 main things that you people would want to hack all the time, and that's what you constrain people to in that editor, and hundreds of millions of people use that, you know, is that any less real of a developer tool than an IDE once you get to that point of people producing real web code with something that has a different set of design principles or constraints? So I just throw those out there as things to talk about more and to separate. Because I think the principle that don't get people playing with toys, absolutely. But then there's a separate question of what experiences were different, consumer-friendly or citizen-friendly or not programmer-oriented developer environments to produce those real web pages could be imagined becomes a separate thread and probably one that we can follow for like 20 or 30 years.
Right on. So we're kind of running up against the time limit on this session. Let's see if anybody else has a last question before we move on.
Hey, Gunnar, I have a proposal. Well, I'll just maybe see if people can chime in the pad, but maybe we could extend time. It just feels like we're having a really rich discussion. It'd be good to allow more time for it.
Right on. Delighted to.
I say that, but does anything have anything else they want to say?
Well, so I have a process question. Where should this conversation take place in between calls? Is there an existing mailing list that I should be on that I'm not on? Where we can, because this is a topic that's been sort of settling in various ways. And so some people will want to participate in various parts of it. So like, I feel like monopolizing people's time is problematic. Is there a mailing list today that people are using, or a discussion forum of any kind?
I don't think there is.
Let's do a Facebook group.
Yeah. Well, Audrey, do you have an answer for that? In terms of people who want to contribute to the research work you're doing, I know you're doing this on an ongoing basis. Do you have a suggestion there?
I'd love to talk to folks. I mean, you know, as I've talked to people, I've written sort of the notes up in somewhat rough format on my blog. I don't know if that's necessarily the best place to have sort of a community conversation. Although, I mean, I'm happy to have it there. I'm not sure if it's the best tool, but I'm not sure it's the best place for it.
Yeah, so this is Erin. One thing I wanted to talk to Audrey about anyway was setting up one or a couple fireside chats. I was specifically interested on talking about the Audrey test, which is the other piece around like what everybody should know about EdTech and learning. But this might also be something that that would be a good venue for that as well.
Sorry, Erin, you were saying. There's going to be a couple upcoming like fireside chats on this topic, and then I missed the second part of what you said.
So I haven't talked to Audrey about it yet, so surprise. Yeah, I was going to suggest that we do a couple fireside chats with her, and one could focus on the Scratch for HTML5 work. And then the other one is the other piece that she had to talk about today, which is her Audrey test around what every ed tech person, or everybody in ed tech, what everyone in ed tech should know about learning. And the latter piece is the one I really want to do a fireside chat on, but it seems like it would work well for this conversation as well.
Well, I'm talking to that, Erin, so...
So I think if we did those, and then we do have the drumbeat, probably soon to be renamed whatever the brand of web banking is list, you know, but there are a few hundred people, and we can certainly push more onto that list, and we've mostly been using it for kind of logistical stuff. So I think doing a fireside chat, continuing on Audrey's blog, but then, you know, doing a bit of a facilitated conversation about this topic, in that existing mailing list would be, you know, three things to at least get us started.
Very cool.
And I think Gunnar and Matt and I can take responsibility for just figuring out how to facilitate that and get it rolling.
Excellent. Well, Audrey, thank you for lighting up the house first thing in the morning on this call. Super appreciated.
Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, and we hope we get to continue this conversation in many different dimensions. So let us move on. Chris A. might just be about to tell us about Woodmaker Brand Concepts. Christopher Appleton, talk to us.
All right. So can you guys hear me okay on the phone there?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Am I sharing my screen here? Sure.
There you are.
Okay, great. So, I guess, you know, building off of just that last conversation there, we've been working through some process in terms of trying to define what the brand is for the WebMaker initiative, and I've titled it WebMaker just sort of for placeholder right now. That is subject to change, but basically just wanted to try to pull out some of the key sort of themes or core concepts of what makes up the brand and try to start to visualize it in a way that we can start to create some gravity around the different concepts and help to focus the different conversations that we're having as we're developing the brand. So the goal here is to sort of develop this sort of mutually supporting relationship between the different teams, sort of letting them build off of each other. So I'll just jump into the different ideas here. So basically, the premise with the WebMaker initiative is basically that, you know, it's, we have this powerful platform as the web to support our collective ability to imagine, communicate, and build the future. So really one of the first sort of concepts with that is the idea of this initiative being purpose-driven. So, you know, as Mozilla, as a community, you know, we're standing for something and we're aligning our actions with our values. So just the first sort of clause here is just sort of meant to represent that notion of, you know, having that purpose and sort of visualizing it in a real tangible way for people to sort of jump on board. Next is the concept of personally meaningful. So we talked about the sort of idea of the authentic connections or ways in for people outside of the core sort of tech community, but really trying to connect with people in ways that are meaningful to them and working with their interests rather than necessarily technology first in a way that allows them to sort of get excited about what they're making and take pride in the work that they're doing. Next is this concept of connected learning. So really about the idea of connecting with your peers and learning from each other in a supportive, inclusive, and encouraging community, which is something I think Mozilla is obviously known for, and something that the more initiatives and some activities that we can support and provide is obviously going to strengthen as well. Next is this concept of building to learn. So we've talked about the idea of 21st century literacy, or you know, the different skills necessary to participate in this environment. So thinking about things about design-based learning, the pathways to learning that we're supporting. So really about letting people sort of get their hands dirty and think through challenges by making things, by breaking them down. And I guess as Mozilla, you know, how do we create the space for that to happen? How do we sort of create that environment for people to get involved? Next is the concept of built by many hands. So, you know, as we're developing these skills with people, how are they connecting with each other to build things together and to work through challenges in an open source community sort of based way? So using things like problem solving, collaboration, critical thinking as a group and as individuals. So moving from that, the idea of computational thinking, so the fourth R, or algorithmic thinking, that we've talked about, basically how we're supporting and encouraging these you know, cognitive skills from the types of activities that we're supporting. So things like what the web is built on, how do we sort of share that type of thinking and have more people adopt it, which essentially leads to the last concept here, learners becoming leaders. So once, you know, cultivating this community of learners, how do they then give back to the community and help us achieve that initial purpose that we started off with and sort of strengthen that cycle, sort of closing that loop, and really just helping us sort of sustain this initiative and this movement. So basically, yeah, this is just a sort of first pass at trying to pull out what some of those themes are. I've gone through a lot of the different materials that you guys have prepared, a lot of the work that you guys have been doing, and just trying to figure out what some of those common themes are and what the threads are that are sort of connecting everything. So it would be great if you guys, you know, in terms of feedback and how you can contribute, just, you know, making sure this is aligning with our motivations, with what we're working towards, making sure these are the right themes that sort of tell the story that we've been working on, and just, you know, talking about the ways that you guys express these concepts and the work that you guys do on a day-to-day basis would be great to sort of, I guess, focus the discussion around next.
Thank you, Chris. That is fantastic, and it's fun to see you lighting up the Etherpad and the chat channel of people's excitement about the brand treatments. The folks want to offer some quick comments to Chris.
Well, so, Chris, you had kind of three questions for us that you laid out in the pad, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to take us through those real quick?
Sure, yeah. Basically, that's sort of what I followed up with there. Does it properly align with the motivations and what we're working towards? So, you know, is it expressing the nature of the web maker or whatever ends up being called, that initiative properly? Are they the right themes? Are we missing anything? We have 7 there right now. Maybe there's some overlap between them, but maybe there's an area that we haven't given enough attention to, or maybe one that should have a bit more attention paid to. And then just for people to kind of talk about, you know, how this sort of thing manifests in the work that they do, or if there's tangible examples that people can offer of, real-world examples of any of these ideas, basically.
Right on. How about that second question? Interesting. I see pinkness speaking to the pillars being massive and perhaps conflicting. Chris, do you want to maybe speak to that?
Sure. Sorry, say that again?
Speak to what's on line 210.
Yeah, line 210 in the Etherpad.
Right, yeah, I think there's definitely some overlap in terms of even just things like the building to learn and sort of building built by many. I think in terms of how we frame it, there's probably different degrees that we can sort of cut it down or build up. And I think really it's just sort of meant to provide it as a foundation. I don't think it won't necessarily translate to like a 7-point checklist on all of our materials or anything like that. It's just basically ways of framing it. So I don't know if there's necessarily any conflicts that I see, but I'd be definitely interested in talking about that.
Excellent. Any last words before we move on? Chris, this is super exciting.
Awesome. No, just excited to hear any feedback from you guys. And I think next steps will be sort of trying to take these sort of fuzzy ideas and try to consolidate them into something a bit more tangible, a bit more real, once we start pulling everything together with the branding and the naming and the different sort of content strategies that we want to.
So the only thing I'd say, I'd add, this is David, is it's easy to get stuck in buzzwords and jargon. So, for example, when you mentioned 21st century learning, I actually had a little allergic reaction because I've had to deal with the school board that uses that as a code word for all kinds of things. And so I think it's really important to make sure that we like stay away from anything that our communities of learning,
right,
quote unquote, which is another term that irritates me. If we're trying to reach, you know, normals, they don't know any of these words, they don't know any of those things.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important.
So it's more about copy than brand. But yeah.
I think that will be the challenge in terms of sort of bridging the work internally and bringing that to a broader audience, making it accessible.
Yeah, it's hard.
And you're talking about using these as the jumping off points or feel, not as direct concepts or words, right?
That's right, yeah. And even imagery, these are all just sort of grabbed and sourced. It's not in terms of actually any visuals that would end up being, besides obviously like community photos and stuff like that.
You know, it feels like the right direction. It's just based on, I want to look at it again.
Awesome.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Chris, and we'll hope to continue to get your feedback, but I see you've got a lot going on. And the debate about Greco-Roman architecture in the chat channel is just killing me. So the groupies are clamoring outside. They want to see what Atul is up to. Atul, tell us about story thing.
Atul, are you able to share your desktop?
Star 7. Can you hear me?
Hello? Yep.
We can hear you.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to click share desktop here. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, this is just a interactive prototype of a demo that we sort of the beginnings of an app that we came up with at the February New York City Sprint. Jess Klein, Dan Sinker, Brian Brennan, Michelle Levesque, I think that's it, and me. So this is like a fork of Love Bomb, which is why there's a Love Bomb person here. And the deal is that you just put in the URL of any story that you've written. So we could go to like Matt, what's your blog?
OpenMath.org.
.org. So you can just find any URL that that has a story you want. And Brian made a thing where we basically use the readability API to pull just the text of it out of the page. And so the idea is that a journalist would use this as a way to as a way to sort of connect with personally with the thing that with the text that they're marking up because they wrote this story or they value it. They have this instant connection to it as opposed to just, you know, a bunch of lorem ipsum text or some default stuff that we put in there. So it's very much like the standard two-pane editor that LoveBomb and JS Game and stuff like that have. But there's this sort of tutorial overlay up at the top. And it's basically like a movie where it says, you know, welcome to the story thing. And it has the ability to highlight things that are outside of the frame, and so it's sort of pointing at things in the user interface and telling you what they mean and what they're for. And then it's basically just telling you that you can use HTML to mark up this big blob of text that as HTML shows up as, you know, just complete gobbledygook because there's a paragraph text in it. And so this script is something that we all worked on together at the sprint. I just sort of turned it into this popcorn-powered movie over the past few days. So while the movie's playing, you can actually start, you know, plugging this stuff in. And, you know, as you make the first paragraph tag, it gives you a badge. So as you sort of do the things it tells you to do, you get these badges, partly just to indicate that, like, yes, you're doing the right thing, learning HTML, stuff like that. And, like, in the second chapter, you learn headings, and then, you know, as you make your first heading, you also get a badge, you know, stuff like that. I think that the idea is for this to ultimately be part of, I forget if we've talked about it yet on this call, but this idea of a web page maker app, where anyone can make these kinds of tutorials, and the app itself is like a JSBin sort of thing, where anyone who wants to be a web maker or, you know, create something on the web can go to and be able to sort of view at the same time any of these kinds of tutorials that that someone makes. I think that's about it.
Thank you, Atul. All right. Comments, questions, feedback, curiosity. Dan is loving on you in the chat channel.
Hey, this is Ben. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
So I really, really love the tutorial aspect of this. And I also love that it's using popcorn, apparently, which makes me think that the kind of lesson maker piece of this should definitely use butter, and that it's not a huge stretch to imagine an authoring environment for educators to actually make these tutorials.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I was actually talking to Bobby about that I need to blog about is this idea of, so in particular, like a funky thing about the way these tutorials are made, unlike the standard popcorn modus operandi or whatever of taking existing audio or video and annotating it using web stuff, the interesting thing about the way these tutorials are made, there's actually a code snippet of it on my blog, is that they're actually generated on the fly. They're kind of generated in real time. So it's almost like a different kind of use case for popcorn. So you can see here a sample code snippet where it says, it's all in JS, but it says like tutorial.dialog.typepairs.dialog.spotlight. I've changed dialogue to instruct, but it's a much easier, more intuitive verb. But basically the idea is that it's actually building the movie as you add these lines of code. And similarly, any kind of GUI for it would be something where you're actually like dynamically creating this movie as you use the tool, like changing the length of the movie. Like, you know, if you were to suddenly change this type card line to say something really long, like the length of that movie would then all of a sudden increase a bunch because now, you know, a bunch more characters are being typed on the screen. So just like, I'm interested in exploring the use of butter. I don't really know enough about it to know if it would yet be a good fit or not, but it is, I get the impression of a fairly different use case than the standard, like, annotation-driven thing.
It's just like an empty timeline when it plays back.
Yeah, it's an empty timeline that's actually continually being extended and manipulated as you edit the code. So, you know, like, if this was just tutorial.dialog, which it is when you're just starting a tutorial, it's just, you know, oh, I want to, you know, start by saying this thing. You know, it's only a 2-second long video or it's movie at that point. Like, once you say that type pair as you're adding to it. So it's not like, it's using the bass player and it is like an empty movie, but it's constantly sort of, modifying itself as it's, as you change it, in funky ways that we may at least need to change butter in certain ways. From what I spoke with Bobby about, it sounds like we may need to change some of butter's expectations, or something like that to get working. But we can talk about that later since it's a lot more technical.
The other thing I wanted to say is that I absolutely love the fact that there's English. I was stunned when I was awarded the paragraph for that.
Hey guys, pretty loud,
yeah.
The audio quality. I'm going to mute all lines. Gunnar, can you unmute?
Sorry. Yep.
The conference has been muted.
Gunnar, are you still there?
Gunnar's back. So, Ben, why don't we get your point and then see if Atul wants to respond?
Yeah, I just wanted to give some props for incorporating badges in the story thing.
Very cool. Thank you. Anybody else want to give feedback or questions to Atul on this very cool new tool? All right. Well, Atul, thank you so much. Super exciting stuff, and we can't wait to see where that goes. Rumor has it that Mark and Aaron and Ben are throwing a party, no correction, 10,000 parties. Who's going to tell us about the summer campaign?
Three of us are. So I am going to announce that we have a name, which is the Mozilla Summer Code Party. So it is, in fact, the case that we are throwing 10,000 parties. So maybe we should call it the Mozilla Summer Campaign or Summer Code Parties. So I'm excited we've got a name for it and that we're moving ahead with it. We're also, because this is becoming quite a big effort for us and for people who aren't familiar, this is essentially a big tent to launch the kind of mid-year MVP stuff. We have, like StoryThing, but other educational pieces
like some of Webpage Maker and Popcorn Maker, getting that stuff out in front of people, but also inviting anybody who is teaching people to code on the web to throw learning parties. So because this is becoming such a big effort, we really wanted to make sure there was one of the people at the director level driving this, the senior director level, and also that we had clear roles in the team. So Aaron has agreed to step up and just be the sort of director level lead on this, which doesn't mean she's taking it over doing the work, but just keeps it connected to me and Ryan. And so I'm going to let Aaron just describe the team, which still does include, of course, Ben Simon and Michelle Thorne, who got this thing out of the gate as core leads on the project. So Aaron, I'll pass it to you, and then we'll pass it back to Ben, who actually knows what's going on.
Perfect. Great. Yeah, so one of the things that we have seen some success in the past few months doing is creating these project teams, which are kind of cross-group, cross-org chart-setting teams that that can really kind of commit to something and get things done. So we have created the summer campaign project team, but one thing to note is that this is kind of the core group that will be sort of responsible and accountable for the summer campaign, but certainly there's going to be lots of room and need for participation across MoCo and beyond. So I'm sure we'll be reaching out to folks in addition to this. But so again, I'm the, I guess, executive lead, which is just kind of overseeing and helping to drive and push things where needed. But then Michelle Thorne is the project manager and really and the events lead and really planning all the logistics and really managing this from the top level. Ben Simon is leading the engagement and partnerships, and that's one that will definitely have some help from like Mark and Michelle Levesque and a bunch of people that are already working on building some of those contacts, Chris Lawrence. Ross will be the platform lead to really help us build the sort of backend to manage this event and all of the community. Jess Klein will be the learning experience lead to help us figure out the overlaid learning content that we will suggest for people to learn around the kitchen table. And then finally, wrapping up with branding and communication will be Matt Thompson. So again, that's me, Michelle Thorne, Ben Simon, Ross, Jeff Klein, and Matt Thompson. And again, this is the sort of core summer campaign accountable team, but there'll be a lot of other people that we're pulling into this as we move forward. And one thing to note, too, is that we're going to set up yet another weekly meeting. I know that's probably the last thing that everyone needs, but because this is such a big, important thing, we are going to definitely learn and want to touch base each week. And again, we might pull some people in on those as well. And so we will let you guys know when that's ready. So with that, I will hand it over to Ben for the real details.
Ben Simon, are you there?
Yep, I am. Sorry, I had joined when we were all not auto-muted and then was in a coffee shop, so double-muted myself. So a couple things. One is line 261 is a page that has been sent around before, but it's something that we're now sharing a bit more publicly. So it will go out in a sort of as a side piece of an email we're sending today. So welcome to push that out as much as you'd like. It's not something that, like, there's no need to. It's not something that we are sort of actively wanting to get out as wide as possible right now, but it's something that we want to make available for anyone who wants to sign up. And so if anyone wants to, you know, register their interest in participating, feel more than welcome to send that around. In line 262 and 263, there's a link to the start of some how-tos that Laura Hilger has often put together. I'd encourage you guys to take a look at that, and if you have thoughts on, I think, sort of any aspects of it, feel free to share them with her or us or, you know, whomever you'd like. On line 264, I have a blog post that I put up last week, containing some sort of takeaways from a dinner I had and some discussions I had with a bunch of folks in the Obama campaign about doing a push like this. and I think that there's not a ton of feedback requested in that post. It's more some thoughts that we hadn't really crystallized before. But definitely curious, you know, if you have reactions or thoughts to that, I'm happy to hear them. And the one thing in there that I think does need some discussion is that when we do a big weekend of action type thing to launch our summer code party, one thing that will happen is that lots of people who are having events are going to have problems or questions or, you know, uncertainty, whatever, about things as they're happening. And so, you know, we don't have 10 community managers who can field support and queries as they come in. So I think one of the things that we'll want to do is set up some sort of volunteer team that is, like, super plugged in and knows what's going on and knows how to help, who can respond to queries as they happen. And so a question for this group is, how should we do that? Who, you know, should we just put out a call on the, you know, to the drumbeat list and see if there are people who are interested? Should we see if, you know, should we put out just try and get internal Mozilla people to do it? I think there's a few different routes we could take, but I think there's a lot of there's potential here to sort of bring some community into this project that hasn't really happened yet. And with that, I throw to the assembles.
Hey, this is Ben. So the scale that we're talking about is 10,000 events or something like that. Is that right?
In theory. I mean, you know, we need to get them first. But that's the very rough goal. Yeah.
So in my very limited experience running distributed events, the good ratio of kind of helpers to events is 1 to 25. So if, in fact, we're shooting for 10,000, you know, we would need to divide that by 25, and I think that would give us a starting number. And that might even be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the hope is that these would need slightly less support than average, just because it's sort of designed to be so informal and, like, just sort of get together and do what you want type of thing. But I think that's right. I mean, it could be that needing 10 to 15 is woefully underestimating how many we need. But either way, the problem of building the... And, I mean, what that would mean, of course, is that the scale of what we need to build is much bigger.
Right on. Any other comments, questions, skepticisms, curiosities?
Yeah, maybe we can just write up the ask what exactly we need these helpers to do and set up a BSD form and just start reaching out to people who we know and have them reach out to their friends.
Okay, that's good. That's a good thought. I'll do that.
Excellent. Well, thank y'all for this. Very much looking forward to seeing this play out. This is super exciting. Michelle L., let me invite you to give a quick instructor community update so that we can move on to the casting from Meet the Webmakers.
Yeah. So there's a couple of upcoming instructor events I just wanted to let you guys all know about. There's sort of two different formats. One is a teacher hack jam, which is really targeted at classroom formal-ish teachers. And the idea here is we're going to have sort of a day where they can learn about things like Scratch and Hackasaurus and how to incorporate it into their existing curriculum. Then we are going to have two instructor conferences that we've discussed on this call before. And then for London, we've postponed that for now so that we can decide whether we want to do sort of a teacher hack jam style one or an instructor conference style one. I have a link down on line 283, which is sort of a draft of a web page. Some people are asking for links, blog posts, how do people sign up? That is how they do so. This is not a link to the instructor site. Let me repeat that. This is not the instructor site. This is just a place where we can point people to who want to know what are these conferences happening, how do they relate to each other, how do I sign up. There's also the opportunity there to sign up for a mailing list that for now is just going to be a very broad announcements, 2 to 3 a month type list. We're going to be figuring out our strategy for communicating with each other and self-organizing and stuff in the actual instructor conferences themselves. So that's why I'm not touching on that in that site. If you want to make sure that you attend one of these, send me an email. If you have any questions or concerns, send me an email. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. A lean, mean, and excellent update. Very, very cool. All right. So anybody want to be a movie star? Because we are looking for some people that want to answer a casting call. Rebecca and John, are you on the call? And can you tell us about Meet the Webmakers and who you want to meet?
Hi.
Star 7 to unmute.
This is Jonathan here. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. So, yeah, we're going to be working on the Meet the Webmakers videos. So it's a series of 5 videos, essentially 4 videos focused on different webmakers. So, for example, we're going to do sort of the next generation of webmakers, which is really focused on young children, youth, young adults. Then we'll be doing journalist webmakers, filmmakers, and, you know, their influence as webmakers, as well as educators and instructors. And then we'll be creating sort of the 5th video, which is kind of like the main video, which will be somewhat of a compilation of the other 4 put together, connecting them all together, you know, as sort of this, you know, mesh or web of the entire webmaker program, you know, who these webmakers are, really. So it's essentially looking at different stories that these webmakers have. We're going to be interviewing them as if, you know, they're talking about the different experiences they've had, the different products that they've created, the different dreams and goals that they have for the future, and kind of, you know, cut that together as somewhat of a testimonial, you know, from the webmakers themselves. The idea is to have sort of a contrast between seasoned webmakers who have created some sort of success already, or created some sort of big picture, you know, thing online, with, you know, with Mozilla, as well as those who have, you know, big dreams, big ideas, and big hopes, who have not yet, you know, created something huge yet. So they're kind of, you know, building up to that. So there's going to be sort of a contrast there between the two that'll sort of interplay in that 5th video. Essentially, what we need to do is we've already started casting for the young adults, for the kids. So we've done all the kids for the young ladies, and then we're doing the young boys this week. So that is, you know, that comes down to a little bit different for casting than the other videos. You know, we need people who, obviously, because they're children, we need them to be comfortable in front of the camera and also have an interesting story. So that's a little bit more difficult, but we're on that right now, and we're done the girls, and it went really, really well. Essentially, for the other videos, you know, we need as much suggestion as possible. So we have this Etherpad, etherpad.mozilla.org/video with a capital V. And essentially on that Etherpad, we've been collecting links and sort of stories of people who are webmakers that, you know, have made a splash in the industry, or maybe, you know, there's an article written about them, or you know them personally. There's already quite a bit, which is great. We're going to, you know, we want to get as much content, as much people as we can. So what we're asking sort of everyone who's on the call today would be, you know, to have a look at these sections. So Mozilla for Youth, Mozilla for Journalists, for Filmmakers, for Educators. And if there's someone not included in that list that you think could be really helpful, to put their name, a little bit about them, and then a link to, you know, an article about them, a product that they've created, something inspiring about what they've done, maybe a community that they lead. And that would be great. And as well, the thing that I would like to ask everyone who's on the line here, if they have a chance to today, what would be great is, you know, if you read over this and you don't necessarily have someone to suggest, that's fine. But if there's someone in the list that you know, that you recognize or you've heard of or you've read about, and you think that they, you know, would be really great, if you could just put kind of like a +1 beside them, just something to denote that, you know, you think that they're someone that we should focus on for sure, then, you know, I'll be able to really filter out who has a lot of support from you guys, sort of from the community, and who you think would be really good just by seeing sort of, you know, that kind of denotation. So that would be really great. Don't vote on everybody. Just vote on, you know, one or two that you think are standouts from an experience you've had, and then you could even put in brackets why, if you'd like, you know, a little note here or there.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Any questions or suggestions for the team?
Actually, I have one further comment. Don't limit your suggestions to, you know, just the Toronto area. We are probably going to do most of the filming here, but it's possible that we'll be able to fly people in or, you know, gain access to someone if they're, you know, deemed really crucial for the shoot. So don't limit yourself too much at this stage.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Hey, Gunnar, I had one question. This is Aaron. Not about the content per se, but about the May 1st launch date. I'm just wondering, like, what the significance of that date is, and if we should try to, like, push this, tie it more into, like, the summer campaign launch, or if we're trying to use this to kind of promote or recruit for the summer campaign.
I can take that. It's Ryan. Okay. We want to use these videos both for they're not designed for the summer campaign, but I think they help explain the kinds of, like, help us explain what a webmaker is. But we do want to be able to push them out to go with the first iterations of the main website, the webmaker site that's going to be coming up around that time as well.
Okay.
Excellent question. All right. I am pausing dramatically to make sure there are no other matters regarding the Meet the Webmakers casting. Pause, comma, dramatic. Excellent. Beautiful people, we have hit the top of the hour. Let me draw your attention to the nonverbal updates, including the Love Bomb update on line 306 and the rest of the nonverbal updates on line 311 moving down. Thank you to everyone on this call. It wouldn't be a learning call if there wasn't a HyperCard debate, so thanks to all who got things started in the right frame. Appreciate y'all tuning in this week, and we'll look forward to another weekly Webmaker call same time next week. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thanks, Gunnar.
Bye.
Thank you.